Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc. All rights reserved.
Named to Talkers Magazine's Heavy 100 for the third straight year.
We tell you over and over again that you're wonderful, and you just don't get it. What's wrong with you?
Congratulations, Jim Blasingame, our small business advocate.
Welcome back. It's 34 after the hour. Mr. Wonderful at your service. I'm excited about having Ted Fishman back on the show, ladies and gentlemen. Ted is a very important person in our brain trust. He's our China expert, I guess I should say. Ted formerly worked as a floor trader and as a member of the Chicago Mercantile Exchange, which is a wild and crazy place, as you probably know. Today he writes about very important issues, and many of you have seen his byline in the New York Times Magazine, in Money and Harper's, and many other publications. He is I've heard him myself on other radio shows, and also on television. He's the author of what's become one of the most important books in my library, China Inc., How the Rise of the Next Superpower Challenges America and the World. Ted Fishman, welcome back to the show.
Oh, I'm so glad to be with you, really.
It's good to have you back. I believe you, Ted. I believe you're glad to be back.
I'm so glad to be back because, you know, small business in this country is the engine. And increasingly, you know, it sees China as an issue that has to be solved to their benefit. So.
Absolutely. And plus, this is, I mean, tell the truth, Ted. You do a lot of radio, a lot of television. Is there a cooler show that you do than this one?
I don't think there's one cooler show. No. And I haven't been on American Idol yet. But
okay. By the way, I did meet the newest apprentice, Randall Pinkett. Brandon Pinkett, I think is his name. He was the MC of one of the events this week at Small Business Week when I was in Washington, D.C. An interesting guy, very sharp guy, and he did a good job. Okay, Ted, as I mentioned, I was in Washington, D.C., as you know, celebrating small business, whooping it up on behalf of small business this weekend in Washington. And who should show up to speak to our group? But none other than the President of the United States, Mr. George W. Bush. Second year in a row he's spoken to that group. Third year in a row I've heard him speak about small business issues, and he really gets it when it comes to small business. But one of the things he talked about, one of the things he reminded us about, among many other things, Ted, is that the president of China is coming to town this next week.
That's right. He gets into the U.S. anyway on April 20th.
What do you think they're going to talk about?
Well, I think they're going to try and figure out all of the ways in which these contentious issues can become kind of friendly disagreements and work ways to hammer them out. So I think you're going to see a lot of discussions on how to work on issues relating to intellectual property, which is very high.
He specifically mentioned two things. One, the currency, which we're going to talk about in a little bit, and the other was protection of intellectual property. That is the biggest, when it comes to protecting Americans, that's one of the biggest protection jobs our government has.
Well, you know, Jim, I have to give you credit on this because our early conversations on China focused on this very topic. Mm-hmm. And at that time, it really wasn't spoken of in the way that it's spoken of now. It used to be a question of, you know, stolen DVDs, stolen software, and so on. But for the listeners of your show and for the people at the gathering in Washington, it's really how do Chinese companies compete by having low and no-cost software and machines and technology on their shop floor.
Right.
And this is where the arguments of the administration have gone, because this is where the great economic harm to the U.S. is.
Well, there's no question about it. And it's not just China. It's all over the world, because so much of this kind of property, intellectual property, I'm not trying to say that we're the only people who develop it or we have always have the best. But we do. That's the way our economy has morphed. We are an intellectual property economy more and more every day. And you know, Ted, one of the things I do when I speak is I offer my audience a trailer truckload of whatever it is that they sell. I say it's parked outside. You can have it, or you can have this little thumb drive, this little USB drive, 1 gigabyte. that has a better way to deliver your products on it. Which would you rather have, the truckload of stuff or this little thumb drive? Guess what?
They always choose
the thumb drive.
And what drives small business is it's how you leverage technology. It's a better idea you have in how to use technology because you're doing things that big businesses used to do.
That's right. That's exactly
you know,
right.
There's another thing that I've been thinking about recently, which is how a change in China's use of intellectual property would change the currency regime. You know, the president really wants China to float its currency.
That's the other thing that he said.
But you might get a change in the currency if you get a change in intellectual property, because if China has to pay full cost for the world's technology, it will want its money to be worth more.
Exactly. I hadn't thought about that. And you're the guy who always makes us think of these things, Ted. Ted Fishman, ladies and gentlemen. He and I will be right back after these messages. We got a lot more interesting stuff to talk about right after these messages. 20 till. I'm Jim Blassingame. Stay with us. Gentlemen, he's been gone over 40 years and I still miss him. I often wonder what the world would be like, what music would be like, what Americana would be like if Buddy Holly hadn't died at the much too young age of, 22 or 3 or something like that, some ridiculous age. Died too soon. We're back. It's 17 till. Ted Fishman is our guest. Ted, I'll get off the music scene in a minute. You probably don't remember Buddy Holly. You're much too young.
Oh, I've got the double album on vinyl. I really love it.
I knew I liked you for I knew there were other reasons why I liked you, Ted. The book is called China Inc., folks. It's one of the most important books in my library. And I mean, I have, as you can imagine, folks, I have quite an extensive library. The things that I bought and the books that I'm giving people who want to be on the show and the people who we actually get allow to be on the show. But there are a few books that have a special place that I make sure they stay handy. And this is one of them, Ted, and I congratulate you.
Oh, thank you. It's newly out in paperback this week with some revisions.
Congratulations. What are the revisions?
Thank you. Well, there is quite a long discussion of intellectual property and how we can affect change by taking measures ourselves without banging drums for the Chinese to do things. And,
I don't think I have my autographed copy of that paperback edition.
Well, it's brand new, so you need one that's
I guess it'll be in the mail soon then, right?
Yeah, I'm going to put it in a pizza box so it stays warm.
There you go. Okay, we're talking about China and intellectual property, and that's one of the main things that you think that the president's going to talk about. Now, you were saying, as we went to the break, that you say actually – see, when the president talked to our group, he said, I'm going to talk to the president of China about intellectual property protection and about the you know, making their currency, not devaluing it, but allowing it to float, not be pegged to the dollar, which it has been for a long time. And the truth is, they did make a little bit of an adjustment a few months ago. But what the point you make, Ted, which I've never heard anybody else say, is that those two issues are connected.
Oh, they're very closely linked. You know, China has a promote industry mentality. So it does whatever it can to keep its export manufacturing machine humming. And one of the things it does right now is allow factories and Chinese entrepreneurs to acquire technology at no cost or very low cost.
Right.
And if those companies have to start paying the world price for technology, then they would like the money that they spend on technology to be worth more.
So you're saying there's no groundswell for the currency to be worth more because they're getting a lot of their stuff free.
That's right.
When you say things like that, Ted, this reminds me of what happened in Japan in the 70s and 80s. Am I right about that? Because, you know, Japan, we thought Japan was doing things so smartly. We thought they were going to clean our clocks and all that. And then we found out about 1989 that they'd been propped up in a lot of ways by the Japanese government. And since then, that basically Japan's been in the doldrums.
It's been in the doldrums in some ways, but it's a formidable competitor in other ways still.
But my point is, do you see anything similar? It sounds to me like you could be predicting maybe something similar if the currency were to be adjusted, that the Chinese competitors might not be as competitive.
Oh, that's absolutely true. You know, these estimates on the Chinese currency are that it is undervalued by 15% to 40%, which means that if it found its natural level, exporters to China, whether they're American farmers or American manufacturers or knowledge providers, would be much more likely to get a world price for their goods in China.
Well, folks, it's a global economy. Whether you like it or not, we're in a global economy. And Ted, all the things you're talking about would be good for if those things were to happen. If the Chinese companies had to pay, you know, the full ride just like American companies did, and if the currency was more equitable, like the U.S. dollar is, then maybe there'd be a lot more level playing field, and U.S. companies could compete globally a lot better with the Chinese companies. And all other countries could compete more on a more level playing field than with China. But there's another side to that pendulum swing. There's another half of that pendulum swing because, as you know, Ted, American consumers' quality of life is actually improved by the things that we just said, by the way the currency is, and by all the advantages that Chinese companies have.
Oh, absolutely, Jim. You know, there's this rift now in corporate America on this currency policy that we ought to have, because those companies that are making things in China and importing things from China, multinational companies, benefit from this. You can think of it as a subsidy that
right.
China's currency policy delivers them. It's like buying books from Amazon when they just started. You know, if Amazon's willing to pay for 75% of the cost of your books, of course you're going to buy all your books there.
Right.
Well, the thing about China is that American manufacturers who do business there are underwritten by China's consumers who can't pay world price, who can't pay what they should be allowed to pay for world goods because their currency is too cheap, but they underwrite what we pay. Good. So you and I can fill our drawers and our closets on the backs of some of the poorest people in the world.
Right. So I'd like to hear your answer to this question. You're sitting beside, you're today, you're in the Oval Office briefing the president, and he says to you, Ted, I'm going to be meeting with the president of China next week. What should I say to him? How should I start my conversation with him? What do you say?
Well, I would say, number one, intellectual property is far more important to our country than you could possibly realize.
And more important than currency.
More important than currency. If you look out the window and you see most of the wealth created in the United States today, the new wealth, it all comes from the power of our ideas.
No question about it.
And, you know, if they don't take action, then we have to say that we're going to think seriously about what actions we can take on this regard.
That's exactly right. Going to take a quick break. We'll be right back. We got more words of wisdom from Ted Fishman, the author of China Inc., newly out, brand new out, with updates in paperback wherever books are sold. Tintel, stay with us. We're back. It's 7 till. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate. We're wrapping up our celebration of Small Business Week. And, Ted, I'm glad you joined us to help us do that. Small business owners, Ted, I do the math. Well, the way I do the math for small business is that the U.S. economy is about $12 trillion. The American, the U.S. small businesses create over half of that. China's economy is about $5 trillion. So that makes the number one economy in the world aggregated Small Business USA.
Oh, I love that way of thinking. And if you add medium-sized businesses, I think you get up to about 80% of our economy.
Yeah, but I'm not the medium-sized advocate. I'm the small business advocate. I don't care about those guys. So seriously, small business is the largest economy in the world, followed by everybody else in America. That's two. Number three is Japan. See, if everybody would think like me, life would be so much easier.
I love that way of thinking.
Exactly. It works for me, Ted, every day. Hey, Ted, I want to talk about something that I actually am more afraid of, and I mean this. I really do mean this with all my heart. I subscribe to the Frederick Bastiat school of thought that when goods cross borders, armies don't. And I believe in the marketplace. I'm a free trader. I believe in the marketplace. I believe the marketplace has winners and losers and failures and successes. But if you leave it alone, it will right its own ship, and that people who have a disadvantage, people who find themselves disadvantaged or they find themselves behind the eight ball or whatever, I think they find a way, as long as the marketplace is allowed to work, they find a way to be competitive. But what I'm more worried about than anything that China could do to us from a non-competitive standpoint, stealing our intellectual property, currency, I don't care about any of that as much as I care about the protectionism that is, seems to be taking root among politicians and some regular Americans today. I'm more worried about the protectionism than I am anything else.
Well, you know, I have a secret wish, and I'm only going to confide it to you and your listeners.
Okay.
Which is that in order for the United States to get the free trade that it deserves, we have to talk a different game, but maybe not go all the way. Because
good cop, bad cop.
Yeah, exactly. And we have some very effective bad cops in this country. And you know, the scenarios, if they get their way, are pretty scary. You know, we have Chuck Schumer and Lindsey Graham.
That's a frickin' frack combination that I don't want to see get their way.
And we just hope that our competitors abroad who do not believe in free trade or even in fair trade fear them in exactly the same ways that you do.
Mm-hmm.
Because then we might have a better chance of getting the free trade we need.
Do you believe that those guys are, instead of being dangerous, I should see them as playing a role? Is that what you're saying?
I think they do play a very, very important role. Otherwise, you know, we play a naive game where everyone gets to take advantage of our laws, our market, and then when we try and penetrate other places, we have none of those advantages. So you could patent a product here, but that very same product, if it were going the other direction, would be pirated in the Chinese marketplace. That's
free trade. You know how vociferous I am about protecting our intellectual property. You know I have no quarter in that area.
Well, it's a trade issue because I will not sell to China if I think I'm going to get ripped off on my ideas.
Don't sell to China, but don't ask the government to protect you from China.
But I need to sell to China. It's the world's fastest growing economy.
Sell to somebody else. Figure out another way. That's what the marketplace does. Look, do you think that there actually are people in Washington who don't know why the Great Depression happened?
Oh, I think there's people in Washington who don't know why the Great Depression happened.
See, that's the scariest thing you've said all day, Ted. The Smoot-Hawley Tariff Act is what caused the Great Depression, most of it. Don't you think so?
Well,
protectionism.
Yeah, I think that was part of it. There was some fiscal.
But a lot of it, where they raised taxes and but the thing that caused the global depression, basically, in my opinion, and most people who are a whole lot smarter than me, is Smoot-Hawley, which was a protectionist, a major wall around America.
Yeah, well, you know, there's no question, and I want to be clear about it, that the freest trade system is the one we would benefit from most.
That's right.
But, you know, other governments don't play that game.
Yep.
And we have to do what we can to get them to play that game.
But here's the thing. We can't teach them how to play that game if we take our ball and go home.
Well, one out of $6 in the Chinese economy cycles through the American economy. I think we can be a rule maker if we're willing to be.
I think we can, but we've got to stay with them. Just because they don't know all the rules, we can't just take our ball and go home. We got to stay with them and play with them, even if we get nicked up a little bit in the meantime. And I know that sounds like I'm saying we shouldn't protect our property, and that's not what I'm saying. I just think we cannot abandon these people. We got to think about this long term. Hey, Ted Gibbs, you got a website?
www.ChinaInc-book.com.
ChinaInc-book.com. Check it out. The new book is available with updates in paperback right now, right, Ted?
Absolutely.
Ted, will you come back?
Oh, I would love it.
We'll talk
so much
about
to talk about.
Good stuff next time. Thanks a lot. Happy Small Business Week, small business owners. This is Jim Blasingame. I'll see you next time.
Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., intended for the private use of our audience. Except as otherwise provided by copyright law, all other copying, redistribution, or publication without prior written consent is prohibited. All rights reserved.